Jeff and Eric are best friends, as only two film critics could be. They bonded over movies and the Portland rain. It's the kind of romance only seen on TV. Then one day Jeff had to move away to far off San Diego, where it's sunny every day. Eric had to cry, he said, why oh why? We have to find a way to make sure our friendship doesn't die. We'll have a long distance relationship, the kind you see on TV, so you know it's legit. We'll watch our movies alone and then we'll meet online, record ourselves a podcast and everything will be fine. Now we have Movie BS with Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. It's Movie BS. These critics are best friends forever.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Mayer and Snyder, the internet's only podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, here with my co-host, Jeff Bayer.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Bayer. That was my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. We have a show, and we're going to do it right now.
Yeah, but first, you know, we're sponsored by oneofus.net. Thanks to oneofus.net for hosting us. And also, this is the last show that we're going to do under these current circumstances, where you're in San Diego
yes.
and I'm in Portland.
Yes.
Because the next couple weeks, we'll both be in Austin for Fantastic Fest.
Yay!
That'll be great. Fantastic Fest, I mean, not being together.
No. That's, yeah.
In fact, hopefully, when we do the shows, that'll be the only time we see each other.
That would be nice.
It'd be ideal if we can see different movies, hang out with different people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you'll be in Portland. Well, right after that, I don't know where you're going to be on a road trip or something.
Oh, I pick Raffi as far as people goes.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'll take Weinberg. He'd be so offended if he listened to this show or knew that we had a show. No, he was on it once. Never mind. Anyway, this is our last.
Yeah, this is it.
This is the last time we'll be able to use the long-distance relationship theme song. It will no longer be applicable.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? We should ask for more theme songs.
We do need more. We could always use more theme songs.
We need a return theme song. We need a return. Like the reunited
again,
and it feels so good.
Yeah. Something. One of those.
Yeah. So anybody, please. And you do it. We put it on the show at least one time.
Yeah, it would have to be obscene for us not to use it. It would have to be bad.
So yeah, you guys can do that, and we would love that. Mm-hmm. And then we will say, "Look what you did for us on our show."
Yeah, we'll do all those things.
Yep.
Anyway, point is, end of an era. Our long dark nightmare of you living in San Diego is nearly over.
For the record, the goal is to never leave Portland again.
It's a good goal. Good policy. Yeah. Well, until the earthquake destroys us all.
No, because we are going to be east of the 5, and we all read that article.
That's true.
Was it the New Yorker? Is that the
New
Yorker?
Yeah.
That one? Yeah, yeah.
And they have a really good fact-checking department, so if they said it, it's true.
And so I'll just be on the coast eventually.
Yeah.
Because I live east of the 5.
And I live 2 blocks west of the 5. So I am right on the. Hopefully, I have enough time to scamper across to the other side of the freeway.
I could see you being like, oh, no, I know the tsunami's coming, but I still have a few minutes. So yeah. I'm going to finish this magazine.
I can see it from here, from my window. Right. Like, it's very close. I can run over there.
I'll leave when
seconds.
I'm ready to leave.
Don't rush me, tsunami. What's your hurry? All right, now we'll do the show.
Okay.
Hey.
What do you want to start with? We got movies. We got
Scorch
big
trials.
Movies. Doesn't it feel like
ones.
A big movie time?
It feels like it all of a sudden. What makes it feel big is that we have several wide releases, and they actually screened them for critics before they opened. That's what's unusual this week. There are no movies this week that Hollywood's ashamed of.
That's right.
That's always a nice surprise.
The Scorch Trials.
You never saw the first Maze Runner, right?
I saw it eventually on an airplane.
Okay. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did like it. Yeah. I actually thought it was a little bit stronger than, like, the first Hunger Games.
Here's the thing. I missed it when it came out last year, but everyone kept expressing pleasant surprise that it was better than a lot of the young adult fiction adaptations. Mm-hmm. I think particularly Divergent was fresh in our minds as being the most generic, the most forgettable. Right. And then here's Maze Runner that was actually pretty fun and smart and interesting story. The book was terrible, by the way.
Oh, was it?
I read the book before the movie, and it was some of the worst writing I've ever seen published. And it was so frustrating because I was really into the story, so I had to keep reading to find out where the story was going.
Oh.
But I hated every minute of it. But I remember thinking, I bet this would make a good movie.
Huh.
And then it did. I caught up with the movie a couple weeks ago.
Look at you. It's like you're a seer.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And so now we have the second one.
Dylan O'Brien, who constantly reminds me of, who is that? Who's
young
Percy
Kevin Bacon?
Jackson? No, who's Percy? What?
He looks like a young Kevin Bacon to me, a little bit.
What?
Mm-hmm. Logan Lerman?
To me it's like, well, we can't get Logan Lerman, so let's like clone him and just use the younger version.
Nah, he doesn't look like Logan Lerman. I think Dylan O'Brien, I think, is on the Teen Wolf, but he doesn't play the Teen Wolf. I think he plays the Teen Wolf's friend on the TV show.
You've already talked way too much about MTV's Teen Wolf.
So he's still Thomas, and this one starts right where the last one ended.
Yes.
The kids have, spoiler alert for the first Maze Runner, they've made their way out of the maze, and they find out what's going on. And the sequel now is all about them trying to get to the place where they'll be able to fight against the bad guys.
Yes.
They become part of the resistance movement.
Also trying to figure out who is bad in this world.
Well, and really, aren't we all trying to figure that out?
Well, and what's really interesting about these movies is they shroud everything in a mystery, and then just kind of eke out little tidbits.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of movies will give you so much exposition that it's like, all right, fine. You crush the momentum of the movie, and now I know every detail. But you know what? Every detail is always not needed.
Right.
And so this does this thing where it teases you along.
It keeps you on the hook.
Not really telling you anything. And somehow that means it doesn't talk down to you, and therefore it's kind of interesting. But only kind of, because really it's just an excuse for action and thrills. That's all this movie is. It's just an excuse.
It's better than an excuse because it's a really good story. And the action and thrills naturally out of the story.
Really?
Yeah.
There's barely any story. I think we could probably explain the full story of actually what happens in this movie in about 2 minutes.
That's different.
Like from beginning to end.
That's different from by story, I mean the whole way that it is
the
parceled
emotion.
Out.
The connection you have with
No,
these
I
people.
Mean that the way okay. that even though this – yeah, when we know all the details, maybe the story is very simple. But the way that they reveal the story is part of the story, and that's interesting.
All right. So hang on.
Hmm.
Here's something important. Would you care if anyone died?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a couple of them. Not a lot of them. And in fact, one of the ones who did, I wasn't 100% sure whether that person was in the first movie or whether that was a new character in this movie, even though I had just watched the first movie 3 days earlier.
Oh, man, that's amazing, because I was like, well, watched it on an airplane, so I'm not positive if this was a long
– I really thought that was a new person they'd met at the shelter. But you got Thomas and the various Mino, Teresa, Newt, Frypan. Frypan had a lot more in the book, and he had like two lines in the first movie, and now he's one of the main group in the new one.
I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway, but they're all they get rescued supposedly from WCKD, Wicked.
Yes.
Which sounds like a radio station now that I say it out loud. WCKD, all the baddest hits. And they get rescued by these good guys, or are they?
And Jansen. Who's played by Aiden? How do you say? Gillen?
Gillen from The Wire.
From The Wire, and he's got one of those looks about him. It's a lovely, squirrely look, weaselly look,
mm-hmm.
to where no matter what he says, you wonder what he means.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great for that sort of thing. And it fits really well here. Patricia Clarkson has a bigger role than she did in the first one.
She's the head of Wicked.
Yeah. And then Esposito from Breaking Bad.
Giancarlo Esposito, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good mix of adults. And there's a couple of other adults that are surprises, I would say, that pop up late into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. It's a decent ride. That's how I kept feeling about it. And so what this one does is instead of wouldn't you say the monsters are the curiosity in Maze Runner besides the bigger picture in the first one?
The curiosity?
Like, in other words, there's monsters lurking. We have to avoid those monsters.
Right.
And here the zombies are lurking. We have to avoid those zombies.
Yeah, these rage zombies, people who have been infected by the flare virus, which these kids are immune to for some reason, which is mm-hmm. why they're so valuable and why Wicked is trying to study them and whatever.
Oh, everybody wants a piece of these kids.
Sure.
Everybody.
And I think there's a good number of fun surprises as far as who turns out to be this and that and where people come from and where things are going and who does this and always some more fun twists. Yeah, nothing brilliant.
Don't forget the orgy. I mean, there's the orgy, so there's fun.
Sort of a rave scene a little bit. Not really an orgy.
It was close. The only reason it wasn't an orgy is because it's like, because
they weren't having sex.
We're PG-13. Let's move it along, kids. To me, it's
there's really exciting. Exciting part where they're in the there's a new girl, Brenda. Brenda writes up.
I like Brenda.
Yeah,
that was interesting that they were able to do that because in the first one you feel like, okay, here's what here's Thomas's desires, and then they enter in Brenda, and it is just an interesting mix to see where it goes. There's a mm-hmm. little there's a little something of intelligence there with storytelling with the teen. World.
Because anyway, there was already a girl, Teresa, yes. And now there's another girl, and so that... Yeah.
Can you believe it? Two girls.
Well, this movie's like got you say, it makes us not so sure after all which direction mm-hmm. it's going to go. But I love the sequence with them and the toppled skyscrapers. They're out in the ruined world, and skyscrapers like leaned against each other, and all that's fun, and glass breaking, and all that stuff. It's good. It's good fun times. Alan Tudyk shows up. He's
Alan
funny.
Alan Tudyk, he does.
As like this... This flesh peddler.
Meth head, kind of, maybe, or something. I don't know.
I don't know what's going on. It's a solid B. Good solid B. Fun movie.
I am just below that. I'm at a 6, mainly because, to me, it's almost meaningless. Because I don't care if anybody dies, and I know Thomas won't, so it's just one of those things of like, all right, yeah, give me another action sequence and you'll explain things at the end of the next one. Gotcha. Okay.
All right.
So that's it. Yeah. Not a bad time at all.
Not at all. And then speaking of not a bad time, Everest.
Everest.
This is based on the mountain of the same name.
Yes. Did you know that going in or were you fooled? You just assumed it was something else?
I thought Everest was going to be about the thing that was the most ever. Everer, and Everest.
So what's interesting about this is Krakauer doesn't get a – this isn't in the thin air. Is that correct? Like it's – I kept looking. I don't remember seeing this is adapted from In the Thin Air. So it's not – it's not Krakauer's version, even though he's there.
Yeah, John Krakauer is in this. In this group that's
and in the thin air. He wrote the amazing, book. Amazing read.
I kept trying to remember the name of it, but yes. And didn't they make a documentary out of it, like retelling that story?
I think they did. Yes, I think so.
These are the kind of things that professional podcasters would have looked up before they mentioned them.
Well, this is what our assistant was supposed to do. But since we don't have one, they didn't. Oh my goodness, there's a pile of people in this movie. And they go to Everest and they try to climb it.
And they are sometimes in a pile.
Yep, but they actually are. Bad things happen.
Eventually. It's 1996, and this was interesting to me. I had not realized that, the first people made it to the top of Everest back in the 50s. And then after that, only professional climbers and like 1 in 4 died.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 90s, they started doing amateur, like, guided climbs, and those were, like, really successful. People, for the most part, did not die, and it was the first time that amateurs were able to climb, which then led to competing Everest climbing companies.
And not a competition to get up the mountain, but a competition for space, for
yeah,
physical
just different
for physical maneuvering.
Start up, yeah,
right. And one of the main reasons, I mean, obviously, and I don't think the movie necessarily got into this. Oxygen is the main reason that there were deaths on Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, not being able to predict the weather when you're up there.
Right.
But with the expeditions,
and Yeti,
it's like, yeah, and you.
Big problem.
You put those oxygen tanks everywhere that you can, mm-hmm. and that will help you out when you get into trouble. That's the idea of it, because your brain starts to go bonkers when you get up that high. So yeah, this mainly follows Jason Clarke plays an Aussie. Is he an Aussie in real life? I always forget because he's just came to us recently.
Yeah, he's new. He's fresh out of the factory.
Yeah,
and he is Australian. Yes.
Okay, so he plays real-life climber Rob Hall, who started probably one of the most successful companies for a while there. And he's got a group. And
yes.
his main, not partner in crime, kind of competition for the business is Jake Gyllenhaal's Scott
something.
Is it Miller? I think it's Scott Miller, who is also obviously real-life. Like, these are all real, based on real people.
I think it's Scott Fisher.
Is it? It does sound right. Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Yeah, he's another company owner, and I like Jake. Yeah. Well, you know, I like Jake Gyllenhaal anyway, but I
yep,
like his character here.
Do you want to say what you said to me last night?
I like that. Well, the first time he's like this totally laid back dude. Like he seems like he ought to be surfing and or smoking mm-hmm. weed all the time.
That's right.
And the first time we see him at base camp, he's shirtless. He's sunbathing there up on the bottom of Mount Everest. He's got his shirt off, and they didn't make him shave his chest like they usually do when he's in movies.
Which I don't know if I've had that. You probably have said that to me before.
I don't
know. But I don't know if I've thought that.
I only just recently noticed that was a trend with him.
So we have a slew of people that we're very quickly introduced to and kind of a little bit one note. But at first you think, oh, well, I'll be able to keep track because that's John Hawks. And
sure.
He plays Doug, who's trying to impress some kindergartners. That's why he's climbing.
He's like a regular guy working three jobs,
yep.
Tough regular guy.
Josh Brolin, and he's Texas. Okay, got it. He's Texas. That's one note.
You know he's
and
from Texas because he said he's from Texas like the second thing, which
yeah,
is also true of most people from Texas. Like,
that's
true.
And then you got Michael Kelly, and he says he's John Krakauer, and it's like, okay, that's the famous author. I got that. Okay, I'm down. And
you
then,
know, when the Krakauers came over from the old country, their name actually was Krakauer, and they changed it to Krakauer in America because of the negative connotation. Krakauer in Romania, not a bad thing, but they knew that Krakauer in America.
It's actually a respected profession.
That's what you call the mayor. Romania. That's the word for mayor is Krakauer.
But yeah, It's weird because this is a long movie, two full hours.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily feel like you're getting to know these individuals. You just feel like, well, I'm kind of on the journey with them as they go up this mountain.
Yeah.
And it's weird how uninvested mm-hmm. I ended up feeling, especially and the guy that I saw this with, Justin – he even said this after, and it was like, you're absolutely correct. Eventually it feels like stunt casting. When Robin Wright shows up in this movie, you're just like, this is a little too much, man.
She's Josh Brolin's wife back home that
she
talked to on
she's
the satellite
Josh
phone.
And like with Keira Knightley in it, you're like, oh, okay, this is going to – right. I forgot in this tragedy like what happens to who,
the
but it's like, okay,
pregnant wife of the main guy.
Yeah.
Why is the wife back home is always pregnant? She's always going to be pregnant.
And it's just there's too many things to where it's like I think I would have rather had these been nobodies and then get to know them a little bit more on this journey as opposed to look at that famous person who's now climbing. Look at that famous person who's back home. Look at that and on because it didn't feel like when you knew, oh, Robin Wright's going to have a moment here. Like,
right,
otherwise
she wouldn't just
otherwise,
be in that.
Is,
yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And it just unfortunately it all felt kind of squeezed in there to this overall sad, tragic adventure.
You know, Robin Wright gets fourth billing. She's fourth billed in the cast, and she's like 20th in screen time.
I'm assuming Sam Worthington is like 42nd.
I think he made the poster. Here's who's on the poster: Jason Clarke, Josh Brolin, John Hawkes, Robin Wright, Emily Watson, the assistant back at the camp on the radio.
Right.
Then Keira Knightley, Sam Worthington, and Jake Gyllenhaal. Jake Gyllenhaal gets the and.
Poor Michael Kelly.
Yeah, Michael Kelly's not on here. Martin Henderson's not on there. Like, lots of people with way more to do in the movie.
Yeah.
But, it's the work of the agents, the Hollywood agents.
Yep.
I agree with you that we're sort of uninvested. It's a really well-made film. It's like solid, meaty, good filmmaking, beautifully shot. And I don't know where they shot it, but it looks like they shot it on Everest. And,
okay.
As far as the characters go, they're just sort of, I'm uninvolved.
Beautifully shot. But didn't you feel like there was a few moments, it's like, oh, okay, we're on a soundstage. Oh, okay, we're on a soundstage here.
I didn't really, not particularly.
You didn't? Oh, okay, no. I did. And it was only a few times because the rest of the movie is fairly beautifully shot. And you know that they're, you know, not on Everest, but they're somewhere up high.
Yeah.
That's how it kept feeling. And
they evidently did actually film some of it at the South Base Camp at Mount Everest.
Oh, nice. But yeah, like there's this one moment where Krakauer, you know, kind of is like, gotta ask guys, why are y'all doing this?
Yeah.
Let's give it. And there's one decent story that comes out of that, but that's it. And so you're just kind of left when tragedy starts to strike, for me, as somebody who is not, I guess I have to admit, I'm not a full out thrill seeker. I'm not.
Yeah.
Give me a chance to whitewater raft. I'm going to do it in a heartbeat. Give me a chance to be cold going up a cliff, and I'm not interested. Mainly the cold stuff, but I just don't like being that cold. But just in general, to me, it's like, I get that you want to do this, but then to see all of the tragedy that comes when it doesn't go perfect or just simply like as planned, and whether it's frostbite or death or whatever the case – this movie didn't emotionally try to get me in to their world,
I agree that it doesn't really do it.
And there's one emotional thing, like truly, that I would normally be in tears for, but the weird part of it being filmed is we are watching actors be emotional about watching others be emotional. And to me, that suddenly just removed me from the process, because there's like at one point there's layers of phones being used and things like that. And it's like, I get it that we're all sad here, but you're putting the focus too tightly on it. I'm not sad anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was weird because, again, like I love an adventure movie. I love Man vs. Nature.
There's also not a lot of adventure in the first half of it. There's lots of climbing and test climbing and all that. But it's really – it's a 70-minute mark that there actually starts to be real danger.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie's more than half over by then. But it's fine.
Yeah.
B minus.
Yep. It's a 6 out of 10. If you have the chance to see, like, if you're desperate to see it and pay extra for the IMAX, that's an okay call. Because I think the bigness helps. Bigger is better in this
case. Here's why I disagree.
Oh, go ahead.
I mean, the big screen, fine. None of it seemed to have actually been shot in IMAX, like where it was using the entire IMAX screen. It's all just in regular widescreen.
And not only that, did you see it in 3D? I saw it in 3D. I would say there was only one time where they even attempted to create the depth. One of the things that 3D does that not enough films focus on is the drop, the potential, like, look how high up you
are. Surprisingly little of that in this.
There was very little of it. There was one instance that I recalled. But like, and honestly, like How to Train Your Dragon, I think, is still winning that category of feeling like you're up high. Otherwise, like most movies, when they're doing it in 3D, for some reason, they don't focus on that. They focus on, let's toss things at the screen.
Well, it comes down to age-old problem of 3D being a pointless waste of money most of the time. And in this case, yeah, the IMAX doesn't add anything to it, especially since most of your quote-unquote IMAX screens are not much larger than regular movie screens.
Right. So just, yeah, a big old movie screen will do it, and 2D will do it.
Which means you can't see it till next week. This weekend it opens on IMAX, and it opens everywhere next week.
Oh, you know what? Not only that, I think it's only in IMAX 3D this week.
Probably. So if you want to pay $20 to see it, you can do it this week. Yeah. Or you can pay a more normal price next week and be just as good.
Yep. All right.
So that's Everest?
That's Everest.
Black Mass.
Black Mass.
You know how there's crime in Boston?
I hear
you. Well, remember how you've seen Martin Scorsese movies? Like your Departed and your Casino and your Goodfellas, those kinds of movies.
And you know how you've seen The Town and those?
Yeah.
Those, yeah, like with Boston.
It's like that. It's like that. Whitey Bulger, James Whitey Bulger, played by Johnny Depp, was a real-life gangster.
Yep, from South Boston.
So he's a Southie. And this is the true story of how an FBI agent worked with him to keep him in business.
Yeah, pretty much.
Joel Edgerton plays him, John Connolly.
Yeah. It's got a feel of a few different movies. Did you think of what was David O. Russell's movie with
American Hustle?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has a flair of that just because
that has a flair of Scorsese.
Right, because that has a flair of – yes, it all comes back to Scorsese. It's Jimmy working with John.
The movie is really more about John Connolly than it is about Whitey Bulger. The FBI guy. He's from the same neighborhood as Whitey Bulger, which is, I guess, the ongoing problem in Boston, that everyone grows up either to be a cop or a gangster, and often they're the same people. But so he's tasked with trying to bring down the Italian mafia, and he gets Whitey Bulger to sign on as an informant, but really he's not doing an informing, he's just being protected by Connolly.
Well, and that, I think, I'm surprised you just said that, because I felt... I agree, but I feel like the movie does a really poor job of honing in on that concept or justifying that concept. It's almost like we don't know a lot of characters' true motivations in this movie. We just don't know. Like, they're giving us details, but I don't feel like we're really getting involved. Like, it's obvious to a certain extent, but at the same point, like – with Jimmy, Whitey Bulger, with Jimmy, they get into this idea of he had some tragedy that happened to him.
Whatever.
But like, it didn't feel like that shaped him, and it felt like the movie tried to make that a point a little bit, then it just kind of quickly moved on.
He's just a psycho from day one.
He's just an evil guy.
Yeah.
That's it. And it's weird to spend that much time with an evil guy, especially when it's Johnny Depp, who's got crystal blue eyes. Those crystal blue eyes threw me for a while, but they're fantastically done, like visually. Mm-hmm. It throws me for a while to see Johnny Depp looking that way with the pulled back hair and whatever. And the dead tooth. But everybody's got a pretty decent Boston accent going that's working here.
Sure. And by decent, we mean accurately hilarious. People from Boston just sound funny.
And it just keeps kind of going along, and you're like, hang on. Are we focusing in on an ensemble here? Is Adam Scott going to speak, or is he just going to be in the background? Oh, wait, we got Corey Stoll showing up now too. Okay, what's his involvement? And you just kind of wonder what – it doesn't flow very well, and it's not a very interesting story that's happening here. Which is just surprising, because there's a lot of people doing some interesting things here.
Yeah, but the things that they're doing that are interesting are the same as the interesting things that we've seen 1,000 other criminals do in 1,000 other movies. And the thing about a true crime story like this is there's so many true crime stories, you have to do something to distinguish it from the rest of the movies about this kind of thing. And this one just doesn't. It's fine, but it doesn't do anything special to stand apart. Again, from the other movies we've mentioned that it's very similar to.
But I really think the weakness there lies in the fact that there's almost no point of view. Like, we're not really in anybody's head.
Yeah, that's true.
And the weird thing is, you occasionally get nibbles of that. Like, the movie wants to head in that direction. Like, Jesse Plemons plays one of his right-hand men, who might be a little bit simple, might be kind of just a thug wanting to bash people in, that sort of thing. And, you know, the movie actually starts with him being interviewed by some law enforcement person.
Yeah,
I can't
being
even
an
remember
informant.
At this point. Yeah.
First thing he says, like, is, I'm not a rat.
Right.
And
it's just kind of like, okay, is this our through character? And they just didn't give us one.
Yeah.
Even though they accidentally teased us on occasion with it. And then there's just some, like, really lame scenes, in my opinion, that are just kind of tossed in there. And it's like, what am I supposed to do with this? Like, John Connolly's wife.
Always with the wife, and she doesn't like his work he's doing, and it takes him away. And it
just comes up to, like, one scene with his wife and Jimmy Bulger, and it's just kind of like, oh, all right. Anything happening from that? Yeah. Kind of, I guess. All right. And so it just keeps going like that, even though, yes, this is easily Johnny Depp's most interesting work in a long time, since Rango, I would say. Mm-hmm. This is the character that had my attention more than anything else he's done.
Yeah, there's just nothing to him. He's a monster, and he's evil, but there's so.
And that's it. And it's not even like – it's not even a character that you're waiting to snap. It's just like, yeah, he's evil, and
– Yeah, well, okay, we see him killing guys in cold blood,
right,
like, pretty right away. Like, there's not
– Right.
There's nowhere else for him to go.
Yeah. So it's just kind of weird. Just felt weird to, like, feel so removed from. I'm a sucker for a gangster movie.
Sure, I love crime.
This one's just okay.
I'm giving it a C+.
I'm a 6 out of 10.
That's all you ever say is 6 out of 10. I've given 3 different grades today. You've given 6 out of 10.
I've given 666.
The mark of the beast. I bet this will change things up. Sleeping with other people. I think that would be good for us.
I think so.
No, it's a movie.
Wait, I know so. I know so.
That's true. This premiered at Sundance, did it not? Is that where you saw it?
Sadly, I've only seen this movie once, and it was way back in Sundance.
Mm-hmm. From the writer-director, Leslie Headland, of Bachelorette.
Which is a movie that you might not have seen that you should check out.
And maybe you get it confused with Bridesmaids, but it's a different one.
Right. Or the TV show Bachelorette, and it's a different one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's watchable. Bachelorette was pretty funny.
Right from the beginning, we know Alison Brie's character, Lainey, is a bit of a train wreck. Because she's in a – this is like – it's kind of a little – they flash forward fairly quickly in the movie after this beginning. They're in college in a dorm room, and she's not necessarily somebody that you'd want to bring home to mom, or somebody that knows who she is and is in control of herself.
She's apparently got some issues.
A proud, strong woman. And Jason Sudeikis is Jake is nothing but charmed by Lainey from the beginning. So the way that Leslie Headland describes this, and you'll hear it a million times if you pay attention to this movie at all, is it is When Harry Met Sally for a-holes.
That's about right.
And it's totally true. Like, these two then meet back together in – do you remember where they meet?
Yeah. They hook up there as in college, and then they sort of go their separate ways. And they, re-meet 12 years later or so. At a 12-step meeting for sex addicts.
That's right.
Which they both claim not to be, but they definitely are having issues because of their sexual behavior. Which is that to me is a very interesting way to bring characters together, because then the movie actually, a couple of times, I think realistically explores what that must be like. Lainey is hung up on a particular guy, Adam Scott, with maybe the same mustache he had in Black Mass.
I think
so proud to have grown it. He had to use it in all the movies.
I'm pretty sure it was like, here's my hunch. Ooh, I should grow a mustache for Black Mass. Oh, you guys want me to? Can I keep the mustache? I think that's how the conversation
maybe
went.
So she's hung up on him, and he's the one. He is her drug that she shouldn't be with him because he's got a fiance or whatever.
Right.
But she keeps coming back to him and keeps – and there's a scene that's actually sort of emotionally affecting as we see the power
definitely
that he has over her. And it's not even in a funny way, but legitimate there. And that I think that was an interesting that they didn't just pay lip service to the ha-ha sex addict thing, but they actually kind of explored it a little.
I don't think they pay lip service to anything here. I think this is one of our most – kind of raw, authentic, while still being, you know, magically enjoyable because it's movie, like romantic comedy that really is out there. Like it is, it deals with stuff. Like you get really connected, and for me, there was a couple moments at the end where like I felt genuinely nervous about the path that like they might be taking, like. Being proud of the movie for taking some chances, but at the same point being worried about the future of these fictitious characters.
Jake,
and I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, what happens is as they meet up again and they like each other, they both realize that sex always ruins things for them.
Mm-hmm.
Jake loves repartee, as one of the characters tells him. He just likes to flirt and talk to everybody. And have sex, and it doesn't, but he does not like commitment or attachment. And then Lainey has her own issues with sex. And so they realize that they resolve to stay platonic friends,
right. And
which I also think the movie
people
does a really good job of,
yes,
of showing the friendship, and they text each other and call each other, and all that feels very natural and modern. And so that's kind of I guess that's the one line premise of the movie is two sex addicts try to salvage their friendship by not having sex.
Yeah, and the supporting cast here is outstanding. So Jason Mantzoukas is probably like going to make my all-time top 10 best friend guy in a romantic comedy. He's outstanding, and I haven't loved him previously.
His wife too. Andrea Savage plays her. She is like the I like these characters. It's the best friend's mouthy wife. It's the Leslie Mann character from Knocked Up.
That's right.
She's
and then
really
you also
funny.
Have Natasha Leone in a small part. You have Amanda Peet. We've already mentioned
Amanda
Evan Scott.
Amanda Peet is important. She's Jake's boss, who he has the hots for. She's
right.
The one that he's after while he's, you know, not having sex with Lainey.
Lainey. And Adam Brody.
Adam Brody. It's a great scene as Lainey's terrible...
Really,
terrible boyfriend.
Oh, but
hate
like
that guy.
This is our. Oh man, I loved When Harry Met Sally, and I feel like this is the first time in a long time I've seen something that's really captured that in a similar yet upgraded, advanced way. It's evolved. It's an evolved When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, relationships have become more complicated than they were 500 years ago when Harry Met Sally came out.
Mm-hmm. This movie's fantastic, and I can't wait to see it again.
Sweetly romantic sometimes. Sometimes it's a little overly jokey. Sometimes the writing for me was a little zinger-oriented. Yeah, but for the most part, the conversations feel very natural and free-flowing.
Yeah.
And it's a good mature look at sexual hangups and
this needs to like Alison Brie has not she hasn't done anything in a movie as good as this, like, and in fact she's actually been in my opinion below average considering the really good work she's done with Mad Men and Community. And this is great that she has this, and Jason Sudeikis for me continues to be a really good leading man choice,
even though
it pretty much won't make money. Like that, like even like what is it? What is that one? Good Old Fashioned Orgy.
Mm.
Rent that sometimes, guys. It's an easy watch. He's channeling some Bill Murray there, and it's a fun time. But yeah, like it is. I love this movie. I really do.
Do you?
Can't wait to see it again. It's a 9 out of 10, and it might be a 10 when I see it again.
Yeah, B+.
Also,
good stuff.
doesn't it feel, in a good way, much longer than its fairly short running time of just over an hour and a half?
No, it felt about right to me.
Never mind. All right, let's just move on.
You saw it like 8 months ago. What if you watch it again and realize it was just the high altitude at Sundance that not enough oxygen to the brain?
It wasn't on my...
Your best movie day?
Best movie day ever. I wonder, am I able... I got to see what's on that list again of my best movie day ever. I wonder if I'm able to recreate that yet. I should wait. I shouldn't do that.
Yeah. And then there's a movie called Pawn Sacrifice.
I doubt it.
No, there is. I saw it. It's a real movie. And
I'll have to fact check that later.
Pawn Sacrifice is about Bobby Fischer. Chess prodigy Bobby Fischer.
Do you know what I just thought of?
What?
Bobby Fischer. Where is he? I don't know. I don't know.
So did I, sadly.
Did you?
I did. Bobby Fischer was a chess prodigy, and he was also crazy. And this movie seems to have been made not because someone had insight into his character or what made him tick and all that, but it seems to have been made because someone realized that Bobby Fischer was famous and didn't have a biopic yet. And they're like, we got to better check off that box. So it's just like really generic biopic, very bland. It follows a standard formula. It starts with him as a kid, this very intense, precocious chess whiz.
Wait, who's playing this?
And he's a kid, just some nobody. And then he's a teenager, and he's nobody. And then an adult, he's Tobey Maguire.
Okay.
Grows up to be Tobey Maguire. He is the youngest, America's youngest chess champion. And he really wants to play the Russian guy, played by Liev Schreiber, in a thankless role. Liev Schreiber is in the movie a lot.
Nobody thanked him.
He's in the movie a lot, but has very few lines and doesn't really get to do anything. He might as well be a prop of, here's the Russian that Bobby is up against. And also Bobby is paranoid and temperamental. He has many demands. He can be like really intense and focused, but then also during a game he'll be distracted by the whir of the cameras running or by someone in the audience coughing. Mm. So he'll have all these weird demands. He's also sometimes a conspiracy theorist, and he'll make anti-Jew rants despite the fact that he is Jewish. That's an issue. So he's a nut, and he's unreliable. He'll disappear for drop out of game suddenly. Peter Sarsgaard and Michael Stuhlbarg are his handlers, who are like always overworked, trying to keep him, getting him to show up where he's supposed to, and whatever.
Is Sarsgaard good?
Yeah, he's good.
By the way, he was good in Black Mass, but he was barely in it. But he was good. Yeah.
And Tobey Maguire is all right. You can tell he's trying to give the character some depth, but it's just underwritten. It's a very shallow.
Huh.
It kind of reminds me in a way of how Black Mass was. Well, Whitey Bulger is crazy. It was a monster.
Okay.
All right. Well, so what? This is like Bobby Fischer was a nut. Yeah. What about it? Well, okay. Why was he a nut?
Yeah.
How did that affect things? What did it do? And the film has no climax or resolution. It sort of just recounts the things that happened and then says, and then no more things happened. It's all what's and when's, but no whys.
Gotcha.
It's a C.
Did anybody famous play the computer?
There's no computer in this one.
Wait, what? Doesn't
this he? Is the one? No, he's against a real guy.
Doesn't he eventually?
Was he the one who played it? No, that was, it was Kasparov. Gary Kasparov, who played against the computer.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby Fischer, no. I don't know.
No. Love you, Will Ferrell.
They should have had Will Ferrell play Bobby Fischer. There's a crazy guy I can watch.
There you go.
I can get into that.
Is it time?
To break forth the rhythm and the rhyme?
No, to do the question of the week.
Oh, yes, it is time for that.
In honor of Everest. What's a man versus nature story that hasn't been done yet? Or not often enough anyway? ? All right.
Yeah.
Rich, you could have stopped after just bringing up Teddy Roosevelt. Because for some reason, FDR is getting all of the fame in the movies. Bill Murray played him. Maybe somebody else did at some point. But like,
yep. big trend of FDR movies. So many of them.
He was nanny. Teddy? Come on, Teddy.
Yeah, Teddy.
Who would play Teddy Roosevelt? Who would play him?
Well, Robert Williams played him in the Night at the Museum movies. Who would be a good Teddy Roosevelt?
Actually, who knows? Maybe Zach Galifianakis could play him.
He could do it seriously.
Yeah.
I could see that, maybe.
And not only that, I heard Teddy's kind of funny. And, you know, sure. So there could be some humor.
Teddy Roosevelt invented bears. That's where the teddy bear came from.
And he named his group the Rough Riders.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. That's comedy. all right. So he brings up Teddy Roosevelt and the River of Doubt expedition. Do you know about this? I don't know about this.
No, I did not know this story.
Just after Teddy lost the election for a third presidential term, yes, it used to happen, look it up, kids, he decided to have a South American adventure, and the Brazilian government talked him into joining another adventurer to map out the unexplored River of Doubt.
I would not explore something called the River of Doubt.
Teddy's son, who was engaged to be married and didn't want to go, was reluctantly persuaded by his mother to go along to protect his father.
Mm-hmm.
The expedition was a disaster. This is what Teddy wrote about it. No less than – wait, how does Teddy Roosevelt sound? You do it.
this is like a Ken Burns documentary. Like I'm reading the letters.
I'm picturing the black and white pictures scanning across the screen right now.
No less than 6 weeks were spent forcing our way down through what seemed a literally endless succession of rapids and cataracts. For 48 days, we saw no human being. In passing these rapids, we lost 5 of the 7 canoes. One of our best men lost his life in the rapids. Under the strain, one of the men went completely bad. Should that be mad?
No, completely I bet it's bad. Bad. Back in the day, that's what they'd call him.
And when punished by the sergeant, he murdered the sergeant and fled into the wilderness. Man, yeah.
Whoa.
Rich is right that River of Doubt would be a great movie title.
Rich, I might want to start writing this movie.
Yeah.
Do I have to give Rich a story by credit?
No, because the story was by the people that it happened to.
Oh, you know what I can do for him? Maybe give him a little special thanks at the very end of the credits. Mm-hmm. The very end, like in really tiny font.
Yeah.
Nobody stays to see that, but Rich would stay.
Thanks for this guy who gave me the idea for this. Yeah this does look like a great story. The River of Doubt.
I love this idea. I'm going to click like.
River of Doubt.
All right. River of Doubt. Oh, man.
I wonder how old Teddy – you know, Galifianakis couldn't play him because I think Teddy Roosevelt would have been older.
Yeah, because this is like by the end, Roosevelt was so diseased and sickly, he barely survived.
He was born – Roosevelt was born in 1858. So at this point, he was 50, almost 60. So yeah, it could be Galifianakis.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Play it on me.
You're going to be too excited. John Goodman.
Oh, John Goodman. Slim. He'd have to slim up a little bit.
That's good. We want him to slim up because that means he'll live longer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, John Goodman is live longer.
Teddy Roosevelt. I could see that.
All right. Nobody that's listening, steal this idea. I'm working on it.
Oh, Jeff. Nobody listens to the show. I haven't even posted it online in months.
I was thinking during Pawn Sacrifice. How funny it would be if at the end we told people the truth, which is you just looked at the movie poster and then came up with that stuff. You didn't actually see it.
Probably could.
It was weird that I said my stuff because he's Jewish. All right. So what's the next one? Why are we doing the next one? That one was so good.
That's a great. Well, maybe there's other good stories in here, too.
Oh, it can't be that good.
Edwards says, I'd like to see more deep sea survival stories, ones that don't involve war or aliens. Explosive decompression, darkness, and weird sea life all around. Yeah?
I'm ready for another abyss. Oh, wait. Aliens. Shoot.
Yeah. Well, the trouble with the deep sea stuff is that you kind of have to be trapped in a submarine.
You know what happens in submarines?
What?
When they're in movies? They'll spring a leak.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll have some of that.
And a bomb will go off, or a torpedo will go off somewhere near them and shake the water around them. That's going to happen too. And somebody's going to pull a gun and say, you take us up right now.
Yeah, all those things.
There you go. There's your submarine.
Those things have happened on virtually every submarine voyage ever.
Done. All right. Stuart says the Ernest Shackleton story.
Yeah. I remember there was a really good documentary about this a while back.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. The story of the 1916 explorer whose boat gets crushed by Antarctic ice, yet somehow he keeps all of his crew alive. They eat a whole lot of whale, penguins, and seals. Oh, penguins. Then he sails several thousand miles across open ocean in a dinghy to seek rescue of his crew. But of course he lands in the wrong spot on the island. So now he has to cross a mountainous, glacier-strewn island to get to his destination. Wow.
Yeah.
Woo. All right. Oh, yeah. He does bring up that there's been documentaries. All right. Who's Ernest? Jake Gyllenhaal. All right. We got to move on.
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
Endurance was the name of the documentary. Check it out sometime. Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage, something.
When I write this one, do I call it the Ernest Shackleton story? I don't know.
Right. Ernest doesn't sound exciting. It's a boring name.
Ernest goes to the island. It couldn't be confused with anything else.
Ernest goes to the South Pole.
Yeah. Mm. We got some jokey answers.
That's
fine.
I enjoy comedy answers. Jape Man, Donald Trump versus his hair versus the volcano. Michelle says Kevin James versus the toilet in Constipation. Constipation, of course, being one of the oldest man versus nature stories.
All right. The second sentence sells that one.
It's
now
true.
I'm in. Yeah.
Dallas Neighbors says, in Sinkhole, Sean William Scott and Ashton Kutcher reunite to spend 90 minutes throwing things in a sinkhole and giggling. Yeah.
Sinkholes are weird, man.
Yeah. Especially like if they up with no warning.
Well, not only that, for me, my only knowledge of sinkholes really is the occasional Facebook post where I don't even know how it gets into my feed, but it's like, look at this whole thing that disappeared. And I'm like, I don't think I want to click on that.
Yeah, it's always exotic, scary place like Chile or Argentina or Florida.
Or Russia. There's been sinkholes in Russia. Yep.
Emily says the rescue story is from the 1959 Hebgen Lake earthquake. Would be really cool. 300 people were rescued. Huh. This was in Yellowstone earthquake. I don't know about that story. Be an earthquake and then rescue out in nature? Because most of our earthquake stories are in cities. We're rescuing people from buildings and stuff. What about out in nature? Yeah. The national, look at Yellowstone.
Actually, speaking of nature, heck of a segue. I don't know how you just brought up nature, but it fits perfectly to what I'm about to talk about. Mm-hmm. Taylor says the epic story of Jeff moving back to Portland. That's not nature, but Taylor is somebody I know in the Portland area.
Mm-hmm.
He not only is he like an amazing gallivanting businessman, he runs a farm.
Oh, yeah?
He's got cows and everything. And I was like really close to being like, oh, I got to find time to work on the farm. But then I moved to San Diego. But like I can like go stay there and work on the farm. And I'm going to.
I'm sure you are.
I am.
I'm picturing you already dressed like Kim Davis's husband in your overalls and your hat.
I'll definitely have jeans on and I'll have to buy a flannel and roll up those sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a cowboy hat. I don't know if that'll necessarily work in this particular situation. Nah, I think I'll wear some sort of a baseball cap.
There you go.
Trucker hat. I'm going to wear a trucker hat while I bale my hay. I think I'm going to bale hay.
I predict you're going to do none of those things. Donald says hay fever.
Oh.
As a thing for a man versus nature. How do we dramatize that? The scourge of hay fever.
Everybody's getting the worst case.
Everybody, and it's like really bad, like making people throw up and
throw up, and you can't see, your eyes are too blurry, so like people are like dropping off cliffs.
It's like a serious, dangerous epidemic.
Oh, and they're slipping on the snot.
Oh, so much snot!
There's snot everywhere.
Sidewalks are greased with it. Yeah,
and I know you guys might be thinking that sounds like comedy, but no. This play is serious. Like, you slip and you crack your skull. Like, the first person slips on snot and is dead.
Oh, yeah. No, it sounds funny, but it's snot. You see what I did there?
Oh, we were supposed to be quieter longer so they could, like, keep laughing and not miss any show, Eric.
Pause for laughter.
Can you insert more dead silence after that, please? Like, just 3 or 4 minutes, because they're probably still chuckling right now, just getting back to us.
Mm-hmm. Justin says, in the early days of the United States, explorers would come through the Midwest and spend months alone. They'd cross thousands of miles of grass that someone sometimes grew to 6 feet or taller. It's said that the constant motion and endlessness of it sometimes drove them mad. I can see potential there.
I could see potential there, but otherwise it could end up that what was that England movie, The Field in England?
That's because they were on drugs.
Yeah, but they're also
I like the pioneers, settlers.
Just saying warning.
Yeah, yeah.
There is not enough pioneer, like, well, because here's the thing. I don't know if you heard about this. Some of the pioneers were not very good to Native Americans.
No, some of them were not. That's true.
And it's always a sticky situation because really – maybe I just want more Native American stories and films.
Well, there you go. Why don't you make one then? Be the change you want to see in the world.
Way too busy dealing with Teddy.
Sherlane says a bushfire movie as an Australian. Oh, she's Australian. A bushfire movie. As an Australian, I'd watch that. Our bushfire education ads sound and look like disaster movie previews already.
She's got a deeper voice than you would think.
Yeah, all the women in Australia do.
Oh.
Because they're down under. Sense. A bushfire, I assume, is what we would call a brush fire up here. They're just a big wildfire. Yeah.
Jason says World War II.
I've heard of
which
that.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. There have not been enough movies about World War II.
Well, actually, technically, there might not have been because he brings up the Battle of Ramree Island. It was a battle in the swamp where thousands of saltwater crocodiles lived. And in the Guinness Book of World Records, it's the worst crocodile disaster in the world. The
worst crocodile disaster.
Oh, yeah. The worst crocodile disaster. They made a mess of things, those crocs. It was a disaster.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for it. Yeah, many Japanese soldiers being eaten by the thousands of saltwater crocodiles.
That's rough.
Yeah, there may have been 500 dead. So just a big crocodile massacre. Yeah. That's good.
You know what you do? You just rub them on the belly and they fall right asleep.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Or are you thinking of bears?
No, you just rub crocodile? Japanese soldiers on the belly and they fall.
Zoing!
Crocodiles. Yeah, you just rub them on the belly.
Ty says Montezuma's Revenge. Starring Matthew McConaughey. All right, diarrhea. Work on the tagline, Ty.
Ty.
Question of the week for next week, because the intern, Robert De Niro is an intern and Anne Hathaway is his boss. And Robert De Niro is super old, you guys.
How old is he?
Like 100. And Anne Hathaway is much younger. And so we would like to know some other interesting or unusual old and young pairings that could be done in a movie. This did not need to be a romance. We hope the De Niro-Anne Hathaway thing is not a romance.
Yeah.
Although it could
just
be.
Old and young.
Could be romance, but don't need to be. But just an old and young person matched together in a movie that you think would be good.
And for you that listen to the show, instead of just simply answering the Facebook question, try to have them not be related. It's a little easy to be like, oh, grandfather, grandson, do this together, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. We don't need that. We don't need that here. Let's move beyond that. And then we won't tell everybody else that we've moved beyond that. And then we can look at and secretly ridicule the people on Facebook that clearly don't listen to the show.
Right.
And then still answer the questions. Right. Who are they? What are they doing?
It's our little test.
They need to be – like that way he's 72 years old.
De Niro is?
De Niro's 72.
Well, he doesn't look a day over 70.
By the way, I did not realize that he and Al Pacino and Scorsese are getting together to do a movie.
Oh, yeah. I heard a little bit about that.
Yeah.
That is – we're going to be so sad when it's terrible.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Can't be terrible.
That's true. It can't be – it could be terrible just with Pacino and De Niro. Because they have both been in terrible movies.
Yes.
But Scorsese really has not made a terrible movie.
He can't. It's impossible for that man to make.
Never say never. But
What was the one with Nick Cage in the ambulance? I need to see that one again.
Oh, Bringing Out the Dead.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
I remember,
it was all right.
I remember at the time trying to like it.
It was at the time, it was certainly not peak Scorsese, but it was, yeah, it's all right. So yeah, tell us your suggestions for old and young duo in a movie. Any kind of movie, really. Well, not a porn. It can't be a porn. Any other kind of movie.
All right.
You can post them on Facebook or email us, moviebspdx@gmail.com. And that brings us to the conclusion of our programming.
Oh, okay.
We had 5 reviews, you know. 5 movies we talked about today.
Yeah, you
remember what they were?
I do.
Give you a hint. You gave them all 6 out of 10.
Or you turn a 6 upside down.
Oh, yeah, the 9. Scorch Trials. It's good. It's fun.
Yeah, it's good. Good stuff. There's some good action stuff there. Some
Everest.
Good thrills.
Nice looking movie. Good cast.
It is.
Emotionally distant.
It left me feeling a little cold, perhaps.
I see what you did there. Black Mass, about Whitey Bulger. By the way, Black Mass and Whitey Bulger.
What are you doing?
Would both be good names for like a male stripper.
Oh.
Like a Magic Mike situation. Now welcome to the stage, Black Mass. And Whitey Bulger.
Whitey Bulger. Whitey Bulge.
Whitey Bulge.
Just go that way.
It's all right.
Ugh, did he show you his Whitey Bulge? Ugh.
Sleeping with other people is really funny. Good.
Fantastic.
Sophisticated. And dirty.
Oh, so good. So dirty.
He made a comedy.
So funny. So funny.
And Pawn Sacrifice is generic biopic. Yeah. You hear it's a movie about chess, you assume it's going to be very, very exciting. But no, turns out it's not.
That's it. That's all he's got to say about that. Question of the week for next week is...
Oh, we just said it. Old and young people.
Right.
Make up a duo. Yeah.
There we go.
And that'll be it. So until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day. Oh, wait. Do you think you're editing all this out? No. Leave this in. Leave all this in.
As far as you know, I will.
Aww.